Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
To Flop Culture, a podcast all about our favourite flops. I'm your host, Fionnuala. I hope you're well. I hope you enjoyed last week's episode on Leap Year with Mairean O'Connell. Very fun. And I hope you had a fabulous Leap Year. Any proposals, girls? Let me know. Very intrigued to hear that. Let's get into this week's news. Where is Kate Middleton? Why won't she show us her BBL? I'm over it. She has been off the grid, so it spawned all these conspiracy theories about Kate Middleton, Princess of Wales. She had basically withdrawn from public life because she had to undergo abdominal surgery. I think it was in January, but she hasn't been seen like officially, I think, since like Christmas. So obviously then you have all these mad conspiracy theories. The BBL, she getting plastic surgery. Is there an issue with her and Prince William? Have they split up? And she's pulling a Meghan on it and is like, bye-bye, and is going out the back door of the royal family. Who the hell knows? Or did she actually just get abdominal surgery and is recovering like a normal person? Couldn't be. Absolutely couldn't be. I'd much rather speculate. But she was seen for the very first time this week. TMZ got the pick of her. She's doing the school run with her mam, Carol. But I'm going to tell you right now, that photo on TMZ, that's not Kate Middleton. That's absolutely not Kate Middleton. That's Katerina Messington. That's never has a person looked less like Kate Middleton. You know what I mean? And I know the photo's grainy. I know the photo's as grainy as a packet of Ben's rice, but it's not her. It looks, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not convinced. I don't think, even with this, I don't think we'll see her. I don't think it's helped. I don't think the photo's helped. But I don't think it's going to necessarily, I don't think they're going to bout pressure and be like, right, get out there on the doorstep like they did to her the last time after having a child, her still wearing a nappy. And it's like, go out there now. We'll give you a blow dry, but you have to take a few pics. You know what I mean? I think they'll, they're happy enough with what, not happy enough, but they're not going to bow to the pressure of this, basically. Apparently the British press aren't going to cover this photo at all, which I think is interesting because obviously when they announced that she was getting the surgery and wouldn't be in the public eye for some time, there was a call for privacy there. And British press obviously want to respect that. So they're not covering or publishing this photo at all. But the, and British press also reckon that the royal circles are going to be very, very, very cross about this. But we'll see. I don't know. What do you reckon? Is there more to this than meets the eye? Or is she just simply chilling like a villain? You know, sick day. She's at home. She's watching The Den, maybe, perhaps. I hope she is. Good for her. This piece came out just as I was going to bed last night and I forgot about it, but then I read it this morning to to try and bring myself up to speed. And it's basically, Rolling Stone have kind of taken over from BuzzFeed as breaking these kind of pop culture investigations, like investigative journalism. They have this exclusive on what's going on with Queer Eye at the minute. It's by Cheyenne Rowntree. Queer Eye, the Netflix reboot of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. It's run for 8 seasons. Hugely, hugely popular. One of Netflix's biggest reality shows, I would say, and one of their first actually forays into it. And it follows these five experts in certain fields. And they help these, what they call hometown heroes, who potentially have never encountered a queer person before. I think that was the point of the original season. I don't think they take that on as much as the reboot. I only watched like seasons 1 and 2. I kind of fell off then. Anyway, they take these hometown heroes and they kind of, it's a makeover show, but their whole tagline is like that it's more than a makeover show. You see them kind of interacting with their family members and they might get like a wardrobe makeover and a house makeover, but it's also kind of about connecting within, you know, and learning about yourself, right? And I say that, it sounds like I'm saying it sarcastically. I'm saying it absolutely sincerely. And obviously this brand is kind of built on niceness and like, oh my God, these lads go and they help these people. That's absolutely brilliant. But this expose is kind of painting a very, 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 very different picture. Especially following Bobby Burke's departure. So Bobby Burke left last November. He was the home DIY guy. He was always tasked with making over the hometown hero's gaffes, right? And it's been this kind of long running joke that he has the biggest job of them all because he's literally making over a gaff while, we'll say, Anthony Porofsky, I think that's how you pronounce the second name. Anthony's like, here's how you slice a lemon. That's his entire bit because he does food. It's all very bizarre, right? For anyone who's never watched. I'm trying to imagine explaining this to an alien and I can't deal with it. Anyway, Bobby announced that he was leaving last November. And it was kind of, again, his Instagram caption, very nicey-nicey. It's not been an easy decision to be at peace with, but a necessary one. Although my journey with Queer Eye is over, my journey with you is not. You'll be seeing more of me very soon. It all seemed very abrupt because there was a new season imminent, future seasons still up in the air. They had promotional rollout lineup. So everyone was a bit like, okay. And also because he was the only one that left. You've immediate kind of red flags isn't the right word, but people are like, okay, interesting. He did an interview with someone then after the fact. I think it was maybe the Hollywood Reporter or Vanity Fair, one of them, in which he kind of talks about it and just basically said that it was the right time for him to go and that he had thought they weren't doing another season and he had gone and basically booked all these other jobs. And then Netflix came back and he was like, well, I didn't think it was happening, so I can't just wait around. I've kind of gone and done other things. But again, also you're dogged with these rumors that maybe he doesn't get on with someone. And that someone in particular had been Tan France. Tan France is the fashion guy of the Fab Five, the style guy. And in it, he addressed that speculation and he said, I am paraphrasing, but he essentially said, look, we're not good, but like we will be fine. Something happened. I unfollowed Tan. I probably should have muted him, but like, it'll be fine. Don't worry about it. People fight. Like, which I, to be honest, I found like quite frank, quite honest. Not much. You wouldn't kind of get that response from a celebrity typically, right? That all kind of dies down, whatever. Bobby Burke's replacement was announced this year. I think it was just before this Rolling Stone piece came out. I'm going to get his name. Yeah, so the end of last month, Jeremiah Brent was announced to be joining the cast for season 9. They're heading to Las Vegas and he is going to be doing up all the gaffes now. He's an interior designer, HGTV star, big decorating fella, right? That comes out. Then we have this piece from Rolling Stone, which the headline, it's behind a paywall, but I seem to be able to access it on my phone for some reason without a paywall. The headline is, they play nice inside the tensions and tumult at Queer Eye. Queer Eye has a new member after Bobby Burke's departure, as sources claim long-standing tension among the group. But the kind of significant thing, so towards the end of the article is where they get into the Bobby Burke, Tan France stuff and kind of into more detail from these sources. But the thing that I found particularly interesting was there are allegations of rage issues with star Jonathan Van Ness. Jonathan Van Ness is the hair person. Jonathan Van Ness is non-binary. They use they, she, her pronouns. For the sake of ease, I'm just going to use they pronouns throughout. Jonathan Van Ness usually does the hair of the person. It's a bit of like grooming, kind of beauty, depending on the person. I actually became aware of Jonathan Van Ness through following a model named Tess Holliday. They were doing Tess's hair at the time, so I was familiar with them from social media. And when this cast was announced, it was very much like, oh, Jonathan is going to be the breakout. Because at the time, they were also already doing a series called Gay of Thrones for Funny or Die. I think it was like a Game of Thrones recap podcast, but it was like, we're going, I don't know. In hindsight, I'm like, was it actually that funny? I'm not sure. If you've watched it recently, let me know. So the cast was announced and I was like, oh my God, Jonathan is going to be the breakout of this, because they had built this personality of very funny, very camp, very warm, like very, very warm. I cannot stress that enough. If you've never watched Queer Eye, you're not familiar with Jonathan Van Ness. That is the main selling point of them, I would say. And of course, then they were the breakout star. I'd be open to argument on that. But if you look at even the career paths that the others have traversed, Jonathan is streets ahead in a very successful podcast, a very successful brand. Maybe not so, we'll talk about it in the end. So to see these allegations, I'm going to be honest, it was quite shocking. But then it goes back to that thing of, if you build your brand on kindness and acceptance and inclusion and stuff like that, are you immediately setting yourself up for a fall? Are you immediately fucked? Because it's just going to look so much worse, whatever comes out about you. So the article details the success of Queer Eye at the last Creative Arts Emmys. They'd won in the Outstanding Structured Reality Program category, and it was the first time they'd been named, they'd been credited as producers, not just presenters. So like, they're at this absolute high, and then you have Bobby leave and it's like, what the fuck? So you have these 10 Queer Eye production members and well-placed sources giving all these allegations. And as I said, the most shocking ones are the ones levelled at Jonathan Van Ness. Three more sources who worked with the reality star described Van Ness as emotionally abusive and having rage issues. There are allegations that I mentioned between, you know, that Tan and Bobby didn't get on. Apparently that Tan conspired to pick Jeremiah as Bobby Burke's replacement. None of them have commented for this story, I should say. And it's interesting because you have, you know, when the show was initially announced, it was obviously because people are obviously very skeptical of reboots and this specific reboot. And the cast were essentially, I don't want to say there were a lot of unknowns. I'm not sure that was fair, but they weren't at the level of fame that they are now, obviously. And there's a big question around, like, are they going to get on? And the why this show works is because they do let on that they get on so well, right? And again, sometimes that is just TV. That is just, you have to go in, you do a job, you do it professionally. They're not necessarily your best friends outside of work. But it wasn't even that. They really played up the fact that, you know, they ended up adopting this moniker of the Fab Five, this real family dynamic. David Collins, who is the creator of the original series Queer Eye for the Straight Guy on Bravo, like, was responsible for piecing them together and talked about their chemistry and said it was instantaneous. Some of these sources even saying it as well. They all really hit it off. They all really liked each other. There was a reason why they were cast. And then apparently you just have it that it, you know, they're getting kind of ratty with each other because they're all kind of fighting for the breakout moments. You've Bobby kind of initially in on the joke about him being the one that does the most work but getting the least amount of screen time. That kind of bit wearing thin for him. And as I mentioned, Van Ness's alleged issues on set. Reading another piece here. Three sources who worked with Van Ness at the reality star was terrible to work with, using words like monster, nightmare and demeaning to describe them. Three people labelled Van Ness as emotionally abusive and having rage issues. And all seven sources said the star would lash out at crew members and people who worked closely with Van Ness. There's a real emotion of fear around them when they get angry. It's almost like a cartoon where it oozes out of them. It's intense and scary. That's a direct quote from one source. During filming, one production source estimated that Van Ness would explode at least once a week. He was a yeller, they said. Van Ness obviously has not commented on this. It's an intriguing piece. I would encourage you to go read it, especially just the dynamics around the casting. And especially because they're going into this new season now. I'm like, how the hell are they going to play this off? You know? And especially because it talks about how obviously they didn't think it was going to get renewed, or maybe they thought the season was the last season. So that's why Bobby went out and looked for more work. You have a lot of other sources kind of saying that they were surprised about the decision to keep Queer Eye going. and why that cast wanted to keep coming back to it. And, you know, they have them saying that despite the infighting intentions, the other members agree to return because Queer Eye serves as the main vehicle to keep their stardom afloat. So you have, like, Tan France does Next in Fashion. It's a fashion competition reality show with Gigi Hadid. I think that went for 2 seasons on Netflix. I'm not sure if it's been renewed. I don't think so. He has his own production company. That remains to be seen how successful that's going to be. I mentioned Jonathan Van Ness. Getting Curious, hugely popular. That had a Netflix docuseries that I also don't think is going anywhere. The JVN hair care line, the main backer for that has gone bankrupt, which is crazy because anyone or anything I hear about those products is genuinely very good. It seems to be one of the few legitimate celebrity brands at the minute in which, like, the products are good and the person knows what they're talking about. You know that way? Let me know if you've tried anything. I'd be intrigued. You have Karamo then. Karamo has his talk show in the States. Decent viewing. You're talking around 600,000 viewers in or around. It's kind of Maury-esque if you've never watched it. Does kind of seemingly well on social media. Did you know he is a skincare brand? I didn't. It's called Mantle. There, no idea how successful that is. And then you have Porowski, Anthony. He has a new docuseries coming with National Geographic. But he had a restaurant in New York City that closed in 2021 after 3 years. So it's crazy to think that, like, yeah, maybe they thought this show would be the jumping off point to a bigger thing. And it kind of hasn't been. Like, Queer Eye remains the thing for them. So maybe Bobby was right to get out when he did, even if it was under kind of shitty circumstances. I don't know. What do you think about it all? Let me know when you read it, or if you don't. Maybe you're a big fan. Maybe you watched all the seasons. It's shattered the illusion for me a bit. I was thinking I might go back and rewatch, but I don't know why I would now, to be completely honest. Okay, from floppy franchises to another, let's get into this week's flop. Premiering in August of 2010, The Real Housewives of DC aimed to capture the political intrigue and social scene of America's capital, promising a blend of power, prestige and drama. But it was drama that ultimately derailed the show. Joining me to discuss is the best-selling author of Gaff Goddess, Decor Galore and the brand new title Garment Goddess, Laura DeBarra. Enjoy! Laura DeBarra, you are so welcome to Flop Culture. How are you doing?
I'm good. I am obsessed with how you look right now. Like, this is the fact that you're wearing glasses over glasses, a fur coat, thigh-high boots, the hair is blown out, the gold earrings are on. I'm obsessed.
She's committed, girls. Because I should say, and I had said this on Patreon, I think, in advance this episode, we were originally supposed to Growing Up Gotti. Then it became very difficult to watch that legally. So we said, you know what? Let's make it easy for ourselves because you're a busy gal. You've got a book to promote, which we'll get to. What did you choose as your flop this week?
So it's a debatable flop, but as Conor Bean and I were saying last night, it's not a flop to us. It's The Real Housewives of DC. It's only one season. So if you are like, oh, I don't know if I want to get into Housewives, but you want to watch one season, this is it. And it is so controversial because they nearly got Bravo shut down.
I am a lapsed Housewives fan. I will say I got into it during the pandemic. So I've watched, I think I'm a season behind on Beverly Hills. I'm a couple of seasons behind on Potomac, a couple of seasons behind on New York. They're kind of my mainstay ones and I haven't. I know everyone says Miami. I'll get to Miami eventually, but I've been finding it kind of hard to get back in, feeling a bit lethargic. This could be the season to bring me back in, I think, because it's absolute lightning in a bottle. It's everything you want from a Housewives show in terms of good casting, mental people, a mental, you couldn't write a storyline except you could because it happened. It's just, what is it about it that works so well for you?
I think, so it's Housewives before Housewives had massive social media profiles.
Yeah, because I didn't realise, sorry, that this was only like the fifth iteration of, I thought it was way, way later and it was just like, okay, we already have loads of these other Housewives franchises, so it doesn't matter. But this is only the fifth one and at that point it was only ratings wise and stuff, it just wasn't doing as well as the kind of juggernaut anyway.
Yeah, it was like, I think at the time, like you see in the reunions, like one of them's like, everybody's telling me they love me on my Facebook. And I'm like screaming, like, I would never have a Facebook now because Facebook is so different. Yeah. So you're in a totally different time. Phones aren't out all the time. Mm. There is no glam. like at all. It's like, you know, the way Kyle Richards does her makeup herself now, you're going back into that era. So they take themselves a little less seriously from the point of view of public opinion. They're more concerned about the other housewives' opinion. So it's like, it feels a bit more real. And I think as well, they cast it very well. And the producers are so shady in this. I think the producers aren't as shady now. They're so shady. Mm. So I just, it's, and also a lot of times housewives go in now because they're so aware of media and their presence in media. This one, they, you're just watching them and you're going, don't say that. Don't do that. Like, we can like talk about the big thing in it now. I think we need to get it out of the way, basically.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's a couple in this TV series, and Tarek and Mikhail, and even though they all call her a different, pronounce her name
they're
differently.
They're all calling her Mikhaela. I'm like, yeah. The whole season, her name is Mikhail.
Even when she's like, it's spelt like Michael. It's like so funny. And they are basically, you meet them, because how they cast a lot of these housewives is they kind of say like, right, who's the Lisa Vanderpump? You can kind of see, you know, who's going to be like, one of their taglines is like, I was born in this town, kind of like Kyle Richards.
Yeah.
So I can kind of see from like a production point of view, they're like, that's going to do, tick that box, that box. And then we had a couple who were like super flash and didn't, and a lot of people who are quite wealthy aren't that flash because they don't want people counting their money, right? Like I would experience that quite often at work. Like, it's not a wise thing to do. They are the opposite. They're like just spending so much money. So immediately you're like, this is a bit sus. But they basically snuck into the White House for an event and people lost their jobs over it. People at Bravo lost their jobs over it. They were banned from ever shooting in the city again. There was a second season planned because we were going to meet the adoptive father. We were going to see the fallout of the business. We were going to see the winery go under. There were so many plot lines for season two and everything got shut down. Cameras down, get out of our city. So that's where this season, at the start, you're like another housewife. But like by the time you get to episode 4 or 5, you're panicking.
There's so much tension in it that you don't typically get with the housewives. I will say, obviously, of your moments, but as you said, even these last two episodes, or as you're watching Mikhail Salahi and Tarek Salahi make their way to this dinner that they're supposedly invited to, which as it turns out they're not. She's getting all her beauty treatments beforehand. You have, and again, you have the producers presumably prompting
the hairdresser to be like, ask for the invitation.
And she's like, oh, yeah, I must get it. It's in the car, not to be seen in the car. People are ringing them and they're like gloating about being invited. I didn't realize it was as serious as it was until you hear them describing it as literally a national security breach. They're watching them being interrogated on C-SPAN in the final episode. It's bonkers.
It's chaos. And then the whole time they're going, we did have an invite. I can't describe it. Like when you're like, even when I was describing it to you saying it's controversial and it's crazy, when you're watching it, you're like, there are no words for this. It is insane. And even afterwards, they're like, no, we were invited. And Andy Cohen is reading the email going, now an optimistic person may think they might still be getting an invite, but this isn't an invitation. And they're like, no. And they snuck through a kitchen into stuff. Like it is insane. And it's only one season, so you can chomp through it. Like if you have like a bad hangover or you're like sick for 24 hours, you can get through that sitting in your bed.
I was absolutely going to say, it's perfect. If you have the flu, you need to just, this might actually cure you, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
It's genuinely, you're in bed, you watch this, suddenly all symptoms alleviated.
The dopamine hit, the serotonin off this is unbelievable. And the clothes. And then also, Beverly Hills was such a hit because you're seeing different women at different stages that are usually well documented for women, like divorce, the husband leaving them, all that kind of stuff. So we've got one who, her husband's the photographer for the White House. Mm. And basically, he's breaking up with her the exact same way of what Camille Grammer was going through in Beverly Hills. Mm. So you start to see that, and then she announces they're getting divorced at the reunion. It is so juicy. You don't get that juice anymore.
No.
Like Beverly Hills will make up that a dog got adopted, and like we have to watch that for a season. Whereas this
don't talk to me about that season. If I think about it too much, I get angry.
We lost a lot of good fans during that season. We lost a lot of people because of that. So like this could bring people back
to them.
In.
I know. Gone but never forgotten.
I know.
Who else do we meet? You mentioned Karamani. We mentioned Mikhail. Who else? Who are the other housewives that we meet?
Stacey was great. Like,
loved Stacey.
Loved it. Now, definitely did not like the controversial take on gay marriage. So there's...
Yeah.
I felt very disappointed in that. But
this is... It's a funny season because obviously there are these... And you could say that with all housewives. There's these moments of total levity, insanity, you know, not serious at all. And then you have moments like this where they're actively talking about gay marriage and they're kind of having debates about it. And as much as I think it's really important that that's seen on TV, there are a lot of positions and takes that you're hearing and you're like, Oh my God, like in wanting to rip skin off your face.
When you find out that most rich women and housewives are Republican,
devastating,
and they have Republican points of view, you're like, crap, you know what I mean? I didn't realise that I was just going to see your Jimmy Choos all the time. I realised that like we do not agree on some really core things. But she was great. Like her husband, like what a performance. He
could be a housewife just himself. Just
he
let
got
him
the
be.
Memo. Like he would come in and he would say one line and then bring like whoever, whatever, because each housewife usually has a producer. Whoever was their producer just knew what to do. Like. Yeah. And I found her great. Her friend Erica as well knew what to do. I think in season two, she would not have been a friend of, she would have been a housewife.
Yeah.
And then you have Linda, who is like, so she's 53 and her boyfriend, who she refuses to marry, is 35.
Yeah.
Handsome, tall. She is tiny. Like you can tell like she's getting older and like we all shrink as we kind of get older. And then she's got the big bouffant. She's fabulous. Drinks scotch. Admits at the reunion that she's always on a load of different medications mixed to get herself balanced out. She's a bit crazy.
Yeah.
But she's kind of like, there's always one housewife who gives you like the what you're thinking in the background, you know, like, you know, she's saying, well, that's not a good thing to do. She's kind of like the audience commentary. She's that housewife and she's wise and she's a bit more removed from it. She was fab. But Kat O'Mahony, like, she came out after this season saying, I needed to do a lot of soul searching after that, because she said some pretty, she's the British, like the Lisa Vanderpump role, the British woman in America slagging off Americans. And then just saying, well, darling, it's my sense of humour. People just don't understand me. I slur when I talk. She's from South London as well, South West London. Never heard that accent down there, but maybe I wouldn't be allowed into the part of South West London that has that accent. Do you know, maybe they don't want me in there. But she basically, like, I think, yeah, afterwards, and her children are, she's these two little girls. I'm not joking. Although they say sometimes, like, children come back as someone who's already, like, they're reincarnated.
Yeah.
Her children are reincarnated from, like, I don't know, like, cruise ship singers. You know, like, they are, like, this duo. I keep expecting them to come in like, a T-bar, a diamante shoe and, like, a feather headdress. You know that song, like, her name was Lola, she was
her
a showgirl.
Her name was Lola.
Feathers in her hair and a dress cut down. That is her two little kids, like, personified. They are so funny.
So
like,
biting, just.
I'm terrified of them. Like, usually I don't get terrified of kids until they're, like, teenagers. And then they're, like, you know, that kind of, like.
Oh, they'd scalp the two of us.
They would scalp the two of us and they would laugh at how bad our hair are.
Yeah.
When the hair is when they're holding it up. Like, when they're getting her to pick something out, like, one of them holds up her mother's dress and it's like, what about the state of this wedding dress? And then when she's fighting with her husband, they sit on the chair behind her, like, two kind of, like, bodyguards, making faces at the dad as she's going, well, darling, you're always leaving me by myself. And they're like, oh, it's by myself. Like, it's like this girl group, like, attacking him. Like, they're worth even just watching them in it.
Yeah.
But I felt so bad for them. There's a massive fight where they have to watch their mum be ganged up on. That wouldn't happen now. And then, like, the fact that he never said goodbye to them when they got divorced. Very sad. I'm sure they got their own back. Like, I'm sure there was a few tyres slashed, but they were great.
I liked Mary Amon, but she's kind of boring. Now that I'm thinking, I'm like, in terms of, she didn't have a lot of meat in comparison to the others, bar that weird, the daughter potentially taking the car or something that Tarek was alleging her of. What did you think of her? And sorry, the closet, I will say, absolutely iconic.
Iconic. And I love as well how, like, from like a psychological point of view, she's making this massive thing about her daughter, but then you realise it's actually just her being like, I mean, we're so close in age. I'm like, you had her when you were 20, like, 20 years is pretty, you didn't have your daughter when you were 18 months old. Like, there's not 18 months between you. Like, do you know what I mean? And she creates this really big deal around the daughter being the same size as her and wearing the same clothes as her. But in all the scenes, they don't look like they wear the same things. You know, she was a bit vanilla, but you need that filler. In this season, you have to have like a really beige housewife because everything else is so chaotic.
Yeah.
Like, Mikhail could have just carried the whole season. Like, it's just wild. And then the fact that afterwards, are we allowed to talk about what happened afterwards?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, please.
So you've watched this and you're like, the blood is pumping through your veins. Like, the reunion, you're like, they want security. No one's allowed out. Like, it's just, it's outrageous. And then afterwards you find out, now as an Irish person, I think this resonates a bit. Like, if you've lived in Ireland, you'll be like, oh my God. You know that song by Journey that they play at the end of every night out here? So Mikhail runs off with one of the singers in Journey after this show. And like, This is why we needed a season two. And her husband ends up filing a missing persons report because she literally runs away with him. She dated him years prior. And then she basically rekindled her romance with him after the show had ended.
Neil Sean, yeah.
And did you? They've got like millions of followers on Instagram.
Yeah.
She's up on the stage selling merch. She's like, we're back in Dallas. Get your t-shirts. Like she's, I cannot believe that she's lived these two completely different lives.
He proposed to her on stage, I think, at a Journey concert. Like,
oh my God. Like now that she's even more famous now for that than she was back then.
Yeah.
And then Tarek, I think, married somebody else.
Yeah, they're happy out doing.
And well, Kat, I follow on Instagram. She seems to be living a happy life.
Iconic. Tarek was tried to make an Airbnb out of Oasis, I think, with the new misses. And they tried to sell t-shirts that were like, I crashed at the White House skate crashers.
Oh my
house,
gosh.
Whatever. And like, apparently if you went around, like he had stickers over Mikhail's face in photos around the house. Unhinged.
Oh, yeah. No, like definitely unhinged.
Unhinged.
And like the kind of like, you could see at the reunion when Andy says to her, so you go everywhere with your husband, and she just starts going and like crying, and you're like, oh no, like is this like a, you know, like signal for help, or is it that like deep that they are so codependent,
yeah,
that even thinking about him gets her so emotional? The level, I'd love to watch it with a therapist. Like I'd love to be like, what does that mean? You know, like it's, I think their relationship is just such an insight into almost like control, and they're trying to control the narrative around them as well. You know, she's like, I was a cheerleader, I wasn't a cheerleader. Even her illness, like when she comes out to say that she has MS, the majority of people were like, God, that's really sad. And it would explain a lot of the things that, like, when she was talking about like weight loss and stuff like that. Mm. And so most people would have heard that with a sympathetic ear. Not the fucking housewives.
Oh, the housewives are all literally like, no lies, don't believe you, don't
One
believe
of them
you.
Said, you only picked MS as your fake illness because it's your initials. I was like,
I totally missed that. Jesus,
that is like
Christ.
Classic housewives. What a mean, like it's just really mean. Mm. And then also it's just classic housewives. It's just delusional, like the whole thing. But it definitely, like a lot of people are like, oh, that just flopped because they nearly got Bravo, like, thrown out or whatever of the country. But I thought it was just a stunning season. Like Connor and I were talking last night, like the insight into politics, you wouldn't have that accessibility into politics now.
Yeah, and it was what made that franchise unique, obviously, because it's set in DC. It's so different to any of the other settings. And that's kind of what I found. Like it was that balance again of like the levity, the political stuff. It was just, it was such a good mix. It's just such a shame that it just imploded so spectacularly, because Andy Cohen has said himself that he did want to do a second season when because obviously in 2015 then Potomac started, and when it was coming out, Andy was essentially like, yeah, no, it's not going to be political at all, it's about like the etiquette, they take etiquette very seriously, it's a very different cast, whatever. He said, I feel like with the White House crash there was such a stink on it from those two, referring to the Salahis, but he keeps calling them the Salamis, which I thought
oh
was
my
funny.
God.
And I know Mary had spoken about it after. She said, I like to use the word derailed, it really derailed things. The focus shifted a lot from who we were independent as people and contributors to DC and to what these people were and what they meant to us and how offensive they were. But I feel like they like to play down the impact that you were mentioning there about people like legitimately getting fired, the fact that they're not allowed to film there anymore. Like,
everyone dropped it.
It was big. Like.
It was massive. And I think like obviously if let's say we ran Housewives, right, which we will someday in Ireland.
I can't wait.
No, like brilliant. There's like five of us in Ireland. You know our team, who already they're going to be.
Barnaby, and you've already mentioned.
Like we've got the production ready to go. We don't want to star in it. We know who will star in it. Like I have like a full cast in my head for this. You know what I mean? If we were doing this, we would want to move away from this as soon as possible. Mm. So I get it. Like you'd be like, okay, we're like, let's not associate ourselves with this. And also the White House were like, you have shown us to have a really lax security. That is the biggest issue, was that they were able to sneak into somewhere where the president was having his dinner.
Yeah, I will say it is kind of insane that you watch them go up to someone with a clipboard, the person on the clipboard be like, yeah, your names aren't here, can you just stand over there for a second and we'll sort it out. And they go, okay, and then seemingly walk in the front door.
And it's because they had a camera with them. Like anytime, like whenever I was working in retail, they'll be like, oh, like you're not allowed to let people see how you could get away with shoplifting, because people will just repeat it in an even better way. So like you're on TV getting shown how to slip into a dinner at the White House, you know, like, and like the Black Caucus dinner is massive, and it is something that had so much integrity attached to it that it kind of like, it was something that they wanted to keep in such high regard, and it was so important to so many people that it felt like two white people were making such like a mockery of Obama and what was going on in the White House at the time. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like they, a lot of people were so disappointed because they were like, of all the presidents, to feel like you could just march in there uninvited, it was just such a sour taste.
Yeah.
But to show the security breach, like internationally, people would have been like, sorry. They weren't even like masterminding criminals. Like, these weren't even like...
They walked in.
These are...
They walked in.
Reality TV stars literally walked in to a White House dinner, and all they needed to bring was like a Bravo camera. You know, I think that's what, there was like a lot of embarrassment, but people getting fired, I'd say it probably happened in Bravo as well, but the White House staff got fired because of this.
It's just, it's bonkers. Wild. Can we talk about the taglines?
Yes.
Let's rate and review them. Okay, so we have Mary, I don't make money, I spend money. Thoughts?
You would never do that now.
Why?
Because I think people now know, like, talking about your wealth brings the wrong audience. People want to know why. They want to find scandal. And I think as well, like, I don't, you know, like, I make money. It's just, it kind of shows her character through that as well. Was a bit boring. Because that's a boring tagline. There's no spice. Like, I'm not getting heat from that at all.
Yeah. Well, which brings us nicely to our next one. Linda, I give people enough rope to hang themselves and the smart people don't. Wow.
Terrifying. Because it's like, when I meet you, I'm already waiting for your downfall, you know? And I think as well, a lot of her power, even she's the only housewife I've seen at a reunion with Andy where she goes, no, that will not be happening. And Andy's like this, and she's like, nope. So I think her sharpness and her threat is her superpower. She's very threatening in her words. Like, she, I don't know, like, I don't feel like she is very powerful, but then I feel like she is because she's telling me she is.
Yeah. Stacey, DC is my town and I thrive in it.
And she really, really loves being in DC.
Yeah.
Like, her whole life is around. She's great for the insights. When she's sitting there, she's saying, like, this is how DC works. This is how politics works. We do not flash like this. We do not do this. This is why we don't like this type of person. She's like a narrator for the DC lifestyle.
Mm.
So, like, she's like Kyle Richards. She's just so, she loves her city.
Kat, I'm here for a good time, not a long time. Classic Facebook meme fodder there, yeah.
Also, like, Kat is at a stage of her life where she's just given up on a lot. You can see she is, and that tagline shows it. You know what I mean? You can see she's like absolutely bewildered at how she's being treated in her marriage. She talks about how lonely she is. She's sitting in her house all the time. She's on that. You know, when you ever go through a bad stage of life and you're like, I know I'm coming to the very end of this cycle and newness is going to start.
Yeah.
I think that's what she's saying. I'm here for a good time, not a long time. I think she genuinely means in DC.
Yeah. And then finally, Mikhail, people have a hard time saying no to me, and that's just been my blessing.
The worst tagline she could have picked in her situation, because a lot of people had sympathy for her when they thought that he was manipulating her. But then when you realise that she sets out to manipulate, and even when he says on the trip, honey, you can only take one suitcase, and the producers did her dirty and that, and then she's saying, I can take three. And then, you know, she does that voice and he says, oh, maybe two. And then she's like, I can take 2.5. And it's like, you see how she actually does get her way. And then she runs straight up to him and is like kissing him and cuddling him. So, and when she's shaking her hands, they zone in on all the ways she kind of like charms people.
Yeah.
So she could have done a better.
She's so touchy feely with everyone. And it's something the other housewives notice. Like, she's immediately like, love you, pinky promise, blah, blah, blah.
All up like this, you know what I mean? She wouldn't have lasted 2 seconds in COVID lockdowns. Like, she's, her power is overpowering you,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Do you know what I enjoyed about this franchise as well is that the person who's the villain kind of changes throughout. I feel like when I initially started watching, I was like, okay, Mikhail's a bit delulu, but Linda's the villain. And then you're like, well, actually it's Linda and Kat. And then you're going through it and you're seeing Mikhail and Tarek unravel and you're like, oh my God. And then, as you said, you're kind of questioning their relationship and who's in control or whatever and whether Mikhail's in this situation where she doesn't really know what she's doing. But by the end of it, firmly, you're like, oh my God, no, like, you are villainous in a way that I've never seen. Like, you're a villain, but you're smiling at me, like.
Yeah, and they make out that they couldn't be capable. But the minute, one thing I've learned from like watching Housewives for, I feel like since I was born, anyone that's like staying in a hotel, you're immediately, their producers always put that line in. They always stay in a hotel when they're in DC. And then when they go to buy, they basically have this amazing scene where one of the housewives, Stacey, is an estate agent. So I'm always like loving hearing the questions she asks and everything. And she's like, oh, you're always staying in these fancy penthouse hotel rooms, like thousands and thousands. Like, when you, did you see when they walked into their suite and it was room after room after room. Mm. But then you're not even buying like a flat. Like you'd have the flat paid off in a year. Like they're paying hundreds of thousands for it. And then the producers did them dirty again with them not being able to pass the credit check, even though they're like, we'll buy for a cool 8 million. And then she's saying, we could have a £100,000 house or we could have a £13 million house. And none of it's making sense. Like that insight into it was amazing. But you realise that they are kind of pulling the wool over people's eyes, even down to the estate agent. They're not going, yeah, I'll send over my credit. I'll show my proof of funds. Like I have to do that in work every day of the week. It's the easiest thing ever. Your accountant goes, here's a screenshot of your bank account. You send that to your estate agent. It's sitting in there. Then you pass an AML check. When they were going, I was like, they're such bullshitters.
We are going to take a very quick break. We'll be right back after this. You touched on it earlier, but this is obviously at a very different time for us.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I was like early 2010s. How does the fashion and everything compare for you, especially with the newer seasons and franchises?
I love it because people aren't wearing stage outfits. Like Beverly Hills, they're wearing an outfit you know they're only going to wear once. In this, like, they're repeating outfits. They're wearing the same shoe in many scenes. They're the housewives I love. I love seeing Bethany in, like, the same V-neck T-shirt and Real Housewives a few times. It's like if we were on Housewives, right? We'd be like, oh, that worked well. I'll wear this again. I'll do that. I'll wear my good shoes, like my good heels. I'll wear them to the event or whatever. And you're not seeing the kind of performative clothing and the pushing of the micro trends, etc. So the fashion in it now, it's got a really good time. It's the early 2010s, as you said, right? And I was working in Harvey Nichols at the time in Edinburgh around university. And what was really trending were these like satin tulip shaped dresses. And they're, you know, that like, they were like, do you remember?
Yes.
Like, why did we dress like mothers of the bride going out to the club?
Yeah,
you know
truly.
What I mean? And then a few
what
years
what was that about like?
A few years earlier, then we were dressed like we were in an office. Do you remember like when
Blazers.
Sugar Babes pushed the button, came out? I was in a pencil skirt.
Blazers, pencil skirt.
I was out.
Yeah, right. Sugar Babes have a lot to fucking answer for.
Truly.
I'll tell you that. And Girls Aloud.
I remember thinking I was like in a black shirt, black pencil skirt and a little waist belt. And I was at an event and I just kept getting asked for drinks all night because everyone thought I was working there. And I was just like, okay, like, you know, I remember just thinking like I've gone too far with like the office formal look. But that when they came in, Erica and Stacey come into one of the events. It's I think the evening where they have the scrap in the hallway in front of the children. And they're both wearing these grey dresses, right? And it's really obvious they've rang each other and gone, what are you wearing? Let's wear the grey. And when those two silhouettes came through the door, it's a tulip-shaped skirt with the pleats along the waistband. It's like a shift and it goes to the worst part of your knee because it's hard to walk, it's hard to sit down. And when I saw that, I was like, oh my God. And even when they come out and do the taglines, Linda's dress, it's that satiny, silky, shiny look. And then Kat, she says in it and once, because Kat doesn't dress like the rest of them and it's not like, oh, some British darling. She does say like, I haven't bought new clothes in about like 10 years, you know, that way. And I do think that's a lot with her husband as well. He's the earner and she's trapped in the house because she's not independent.
Mm.
She becomes independent on the show and gets a paycheck and leaves him, which is stunning. But like, you can see the difference. Like a lot of them are wearing clothes of the now. You know, when Linda's doing her poof my dress, that was just so in fashion at the time. It was peak 2009 to 2011 fashion. Like, I don't know what we were doing, but we were doing something on repeat for the whole time. So I just love that insight into all the housewives have something like that.
They're such nice time capsules in some ways to be able to refer back and be like, oh yeah, I remember this. I remember wearing this.
Have you ever watched OC?
Yeah, but I never finished it.
So OC has such Cork vibes for me because like, I don't know what it is, but like In Cork, like, we verge on bad taste in the best way possible a lot. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, even like, I brought my friends to Cork and they were like, men are so camp here. Like, yeah. I'm obsessed. Like, yeah. like my uncles would be like, God, you look stunning. That's a stunning dress, you know, like, and it's really like powerful and they're in a bright red pair of trousers. You know what I mean? It's like very flamboyant like that. And OC is like that. They wear, you know, those star top, like the basically their fully embellished jersey, A-line shape, and a pair of flared jeans, and then a Cork platform.
Yeah,
like, you know, the like that kind of look, like, and it's all of it. I can almost smell the fabric. I can hear the sound of like the bangles. Like, it's Housewives gives you such a snapshot into a time that we were able to wear our clothes constantly. So yeah. we have more of a grow when we see them. Because I'm like, oh, that's just like a dress that I wore repeatedly at that time.
Yeah.
Whereas when you look at Beverly Hills now, you go, oh, there was a month when everyone wore Fendi tracksuits.
Yeah.
But I never wore one myself on repeat. You're more attached to the old Housewives clothes.
Can you ever see Real Housewives of DC coming back? I suppose as a franchise standalone and also this cast. In this show or maybe as part of another show? It's kind of a two-part question, but what do you think?
Never. The White House, like, as we see in that franchise, they run the show. Everything is around politics there. That is like the Geppetto of the entire city. You know what I mean? And for good reason, obviously. But you breach their security, you're not going to be allowed to take up cameras again in that city. I don't think anyway. I think maybe if there was like, you know, a really... like, even when Trump was there, they didn't even, like, that would have been the perfect time to bring a reality TV series in. He probably would have okayed it. But I think there was just such damage done.
Yeah.
And I think also, I don't think Bravo would want to sit and beg to be on it either.
Yeah.
Like, when you look at Potomac, like, and I also think politics are very, very, like, when you look at America now, I don't think people want to watch anything to do with people fighting for being one side or the other. I don't think we want to hear about it. I think it's so nuanced, and I think so many people are so heavily affected by politics now. I don't think there's a place for it in reality TV anymore. But like, Potomac is like the way we get to see the same kind of like buzz of how they lived aside from politics, and it's like an excellent franchise.
I love Potomac.
Candace is like, I think, one of my favourite housewives.
Oh,
she's incredible.
And that song is a banger. That, oh, yeah. That song is actually good.
It's, and her husband is a parody for me. Like, I'm always like, this isn't real, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's like, you know, like when you're like a young teenage boy gets obsessed with like, you know, just being like really macho and stuff like that. Like, and he's in his little hoodie, like giving out, you know what I mean? I'm just like, what is going on here? You know what I mean? And he's like, how much was that bag? And I'm just like... Like, this is crazy.
Oh,
and Portia's
God.
Coming back to Atlanta.
Yes, we saw that.
That would be chaos. She gets the memo when it comes to Housewives, so she's going to destroy the place. I can't wait.
All kicking off, all changing. Okay, in a nutshell then, why did Real Housewives of DC flop?
Real Housewives of DC flopped for two reasons, I think. One, I think it didn't heat up towards until the end. And then there was this massive bang. And I think that's because they thought there was going to be a season two. So they had legs in it. So it was a flop because we never got a rounded out sense of the drama. It just stopped. It's like your friend is like, oh, my taxi's here. I can't finish this gossip. And you're like, oh, deflated. And then I think the big flop was the fact that they breached security in one of the places that's supposed to be the most secure place in the United States. And it flopped from like a security point of view as well as a viewer point of view. But for me, I think it's an incredible, like, if somebody says it's a flop, I'm always like trying to fight for it. But on paper, it's a flop.
You are a best-selling author and your new book, Garma Goddess, is out now. Talk to me a little bit about it. Why did you want to write that book?
I think it's like with Gaff Goddess and Decor Galore, a lot of it was so organically came about because people were like, it was stuff I was doing at work. And people asked me a lot of on fashion because my background's in it. I studied it and I worked in it. And I think we're all a little bit disgruntled. Now, you know yourself, like, quality's crap out there. It's hard to get good clothes. It's hard to get good quality. So it was kind of coming about anyway. And it's just like the same with Gaff Goddess. I was answering the same questions. And I was like, there's a book in this. But I think in my head, I've been writing it for years. You know, it's something I've always wanted to do. But it's been so well received, like at the events this week. Like, I keep saying, like, the like readers of these books are like friends I haven't met yet. Like, we're all like on the same buzz, you know, like it's all like the same interests and the same kind of concerns, and we all want the same things out of our clothes, you know. So like, it's not a book on style or how to look or what size or budget or like, you're an apple. Like, you know, it's not that. Like,
not the apple shape, fuck
no,
me.
No, like,
Jesus
I wouldn't
Christ.
Listen to someone telling me how to dress. I'm not going to tell someone how to dress. Instead, it's more like, here's all the info and then you make the decisions you want to make. But it's just been lovely. I feel like I've fallen back in love with fashion again. Like, I left it because I couldn't stand the integrity of it because we were designing fast fashion. And now I feel like I'm standing behind, like, every time I'm holding the book, I'm like, this is something that I've created in fashion that is going to do the reverse of what I was doing as a designer. It's reducing landfill. It's making people think twice about stuff, and it's helping people get a wardrobe that's long lasting. Like, I feel like I've kind of done myself justice in it. I feel really proud of it. So.
And you should. It's brilliant. I'll leave a link to order in the show notes as well as
oh,
all of Laura's other books. Where can people find you otherwise? Where else are you?
I'm Laura De Barra on everything, but I'll warn you, it's just like my personal life on social. So, but I use Instagram. The most Instagram is Laura De Barra, and TikTok is more like hacks for the home. Laura De Barra as well.
Laura De Barra, you're more than welcome back. Please come back because you had a couple of other suggestions. One, Amazon Prime, if you're listening, put Growing Up Gaddy back on Prime, okay? Because I would like to do that.
We need to like definitely push for that because it's incredible.
We could do an episode per book the next time you keep going. So we'll do Growing Up Gaddy, and Daisy of Love was also on the list. So you
oh
need to come
God,
back for that.
Oh my God, Daisy of Love. And we need to do Rock of Love as well.
Yeah.
And like Mob Wives was brilliant. But I think Daisy of Love, we have to, even for the push-up bras. And we could both wear like a big, massive push-up bra for it and a trucker hat. I think what we should be doing, because today we've got Mob Wives
yeah.
to chat about this because we were doing it. But I think yeah. the next time we do it, we need to theme with it. But we need to do that Ed Hardy look. I'd love to see you in it.
I had an Ed Hardy perfume when I was younger and I thought it was the shit. It was like a big, and it had all the Ed Hardy colours on it. It was bright pink. And it might as well have been petrol, but I was living.
Oh my God, and it probably was petrol.
Yeah, literally, yeah. My godmother got it for me. Shout out, Brita. But I'd say she was like, what, not a clue. Anyway, on a tangent. Laura De Barra, thank you so much for joining me on Flap Culture.
It has been a fucking pleasure. Thank you so much.
A huge thanks to Laura De Barra. I will leave all of her links below. Don't forget to pick up a copy of her new book, Garment Goddess, or any of her other books, wherever you get books. Finally, who is top of the flaps this week?
You're a flop. Flop.
Top of the flaps this week is the Sires family, because what in the fucking EastEnders is going on here? I cannot stop thinking about this story. It's everything I want from a celebrity story. It's just so cuckoo bananas. If you're not familiar, we need to go back to 2022, first of all, and talk about Tish Cyrus, Miley Cyrus, and Noah Cyrus's mom. She files for a divorce from Billy Ray Cyrus. Noah Cyrus's and Miley Cyrus's father. They have been plagued for years with rumors of infidelity, and they had split up prior to that, and I think Tish had initially filed, didn't end up going anywhere, but ultimately she did file on April 6, 2022. She said it, irreconcilable differences. It is after 30 years, 5 amazing children and a lifetime of memories, we've decided to go our separate ways, not with sadness, but with love in our hearts. That happens, that's all grand. Noah and her dad collaborate on a song, September 2022. She calls him her hero. That's great for them. Brilliant. November 2022, Billy Ray is engaged to a singer called Fire Rose, who is a lot younger than him, who he met on the set of Hannah Montana. I am going to leave that information hang in the air, and what you do with that, that's your business. But at the time he said, you know, no hard feelings. His family were like, happy enough for the engagement. Everyone knew that relationship was over a long time ago, referring to a split from Tish even. Everybody's turning the page. It's been a lot, but everyone knew that it was time for change. August 19, 2023, we're fast forwarding slightly. We have Tish Cyrus. She's getting married to Dominic Purcell, if you are an American. He was in Prison Break. Some of the children are present. Some of them aren't. Which children are present? We've got Miley, we've got Brandy, we've got her son Trace. Everyone's delighted. They're in Malibu, they're getting married. Brilliant. Everyone's like, where's Noah? Where's Brazen Cyrus? Apparently that's a name. On the day of the wedding, Noah shares a photo and she's wearing a t-shirt with Billy Ray on it. So everyone's like, oh my God, they've picked sides there, they're scrapping, blah, 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 not great. August 24, 2023, Miley is talking about her dad and says that she and her dad have widely different relationships to fame and success. Because I think it should be noted that Hannah Montana kind of helped Billy Ray get him out of his irrelevant era. His irrelevant kind of embarrassing era. Like, Iggy Breguet was very embarrassing for him and perceived as like a joke song, not a legitimate song, right? Miley's coming out then to some vacation And she has this special to go along with it, Endless Summer Vacation, continued in brackets, Backyard Sessions. Guys, we need to make titles longer, I think, just a note on that. She talks about her dad. And she says, my dad grew up the opposite of me. I grew up on a soundstage, like in a house with a family that was super close and all lived under the same roof. And I grew up financially stable and emotionally stable. I think in my relationships also. That's something that my dad didn't have. I think that's where me and my dad's relationship to fame and success is widely different. Him feeling loved by a big audience impacted him emotionally more than it ever could me. When he feels special or important, it's like healing a childhood wound. And I've always been made to feel like a star. It makes me emotional to think about. Trey Cyrus comments in between this, August 28, 2023. Says he'd be more successful if he wasn't part of a famous family. This is on his Instagram account. He's just doing an Instagram QA. October 10th, so this is however many months later after August. October 10th, 2023, Billy Ray Cyrus marries Fire Rose. They get the People exclusive, I'm pretty sure. 10th of the 10th, 2023 will always be the beautiful, joyous day that our two souls united as one in holy matrimony. It was the most perfect, ethereal celebration of love we could have ever imagined. Brilliant. Perfect. February 4th this year, the Grammys. Miley Cyrus does not thank Billy Ray Cyrus during her Grammys acceptance speech. So again, everyone's like, what's going on? A couple of days later, Tish Cyrus is on the Call Her Daddy podcast and gets into more detail as to why they split and why it was kind of inevitable. She says, it had not been in a good place for a long time. I think I did stay so long out of fear, literal fear of being alone. I met him when I was 24. So I like grew up and he was such a huge part of that. Being alone and all of a sudden just having kind of the weight of the world off my shoulders in some ways, and I was able to just breathe. She was talking about life at the beginning of COVID. Billy Ray had stayed in Nashville. She stayed in California to be closer to Miley and Noah. Her mother died during that time as well, and she said she had a complete psychological breakdown. I could not eat. I could not sleep. I could not stop crying. I don't have my mom, and then I don't have my husband, who's been my husband for 30 years. Looking back on it, it would have been better for her had I left. I would have been much better. Yeah, she had previously filed for divorce in 2010 and 2013, so she's talking about how she wanted to protect Noah in particular, who was still very young at the time. But yeah. Then you have more sources saying Noah's always going to be loyal to Billy Ray after the divorce. Then, March 1st, you have a source tells People that Noah was casually seeing Dominic Purcell before he got with her mom, Tish. Okay? This is what the source said. Noah and Dominic were seeing each other in a friends with benefits way off and on. They stopped seeing each other and then Tish started something up. Tish knew he had been seeing Noah. Tish never gave Noah the chance to talk about all of this before they got married. More accusations then that like she was banned from the wedding so she didn't make a scene. You have a source from Miley's camp saying Miley didn't have a clue. Miley had no idea about the drama with Dominic, no idea at all. She confronted her mom about it. She thinks it's a strange situation, but she loves her mom and wants her to be happy. What's going on, girls? Like, what in the Take a Break magazine is going on here? It's too wild and it's been too, and there's too many sources and nobody is saying anything that it has to, there has to be some truth in it. So it's like, did Tish not know? Why would you then not immediately divorce a man who was with your daughter who is, just to put it into context, Noah is 24. Dominic Purcell is frantically Googling. Never has Dominic Purcell ever been more relevant. 54. Noah is 24. 30 years. More information I'm just going to let hang in the air. You've another, I'm reading another piece here. It's an exclusive to Us Weekly. So again, pinch of salt. But the headline is, Miley Cyrus is fully aware of Sister Noah's relationship with Dominic Purcell. And she's out here being like, remember the song with Pharrell I did? Can we listen to this and maybe ignore the craziness over here? Maybe? Brilliant. Perfect. A second source tells Us Weekly, that Noah was not Dominic's ex when Tish began dating him. They were seeing each other when he started dating Tish. Despite knowing the truth, the first source claims that Miley took her mom's side and did everything in her power to keep Noah from crashing the 2023 wedding. However, a third source tells Us Weekly that Miley tried to stay out of the family drama, but her strong bond with Tish won out. Miley believes the family rift is beyond repair at this time. Miley's devastated, her family's been torn apart. Noah refuses to communicate with her sister and Tish is not open to any reconciliation with Noah. What on God's green earth is going on in the House of Commons? What's going on? What do we think? Did someone know? Is it true? Did someone knew? Is that English? I'm not sure. What Dominic, what are you actually doing in the midst of all this? You know what I mean? What am I doing talking about the girlies when, sorry, the Cyrus family, we're on a discovery of learning here apparently. Top of the flops is Dominic Purcell. You messy, messy man. Stop fraternising with women that are 30 years younger than you, first of all, and maybe go do something that isn't a fucking irrelevant prison break reboot, okay? Maybe try getting a job. Hmm? Has anyone tried doing that? Revolutionary. Brilliant. Consider that. Anyway, that's it from us this week. We're on social media at fatculture_pod on Instagram and TikTok. Come join us over there. I'd love your ratings. 5 stars. We're actually nearly, I feel like I only just asked for 200 reviews and now we're nearly, or 250 and now we're nearly at 300, which is crazy. And I really appreciate that. That's on Spotify. Yeah, we're 269, lol, if you want to leave a review. If you want to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and your nickname, I would recommend a bop or flop to you at the end of next week's episode. Shout out to the patrons. It's patreon.com/flapculture. There's a new episode coming this month. Now that the dust has finally settled, myself and Orla Condon, host of My Pot on Paper, and don't quote me, we are talking Love Island All Stars. And there's lots of other episodes coming too. So keep an eye out for that. Let's shout out some patrons. Hello to Albugs. Hello to Grania and hello to Taylor. And hello to Ashley. Hello, Ashley. Thank you for being a part of the Patreon. I really appreciate it. Patreon, I should say. A reminder, you can watch some of the episodes of Flop Culture. They're on YouTube. It's youtube.com/FanulaJ. This has been Flop Culture, as always, edited by Adam Shanahan. I will see you all next week for more flops. Bye-bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.